This didn't happen to me, but a close friend of mine. To avoid any confusion, I will write the story from his perspective. This happened several years ago when I was about 14. My family planned a weekend getaway to visit my uncle in Maine. We would stay in a cabin because my uncle's house was too small to accommodate everyone. We arrived at the cabin on a Thursday night and planned on staying until Sunday. It was Christmas Eve when we got there. I'll give you a brief layout of the cabin. It was a small, single-story ranch-style house with two bedrooms, a kitchen, a dining room, an outdoor balcony, and one bathroom. We unpacked our belongings and settled in for the night. The next morning, we headed to my uncle's house and spent the entire day there. We helped prepare a Christmas dinner and had a small fire going outside. After a long day of celebration, we drove back to the cabin, extremely exhausted. I got washed up and ready for bed. However, once I exited the bathroom, I felt a dreadful sensation come over me, an uneasiness in the pit of my stomach. It felt as though something was in the cabin with us. As a side note, I'll mention that I'm a firm believer in the paranormal. I cautiously made my way towards the dining room. When I entered, I looked towards the back of the room where the window was. The moonlight outside had bled into the room, casting a dim glow. When my eyes adjusted, I then saw a dark figure standing in the corner. A pair of red eyes stared into my soul with malicious intent. My next actions are inexplicable. I still have trouble understanding what happened to me when I go back to that night. But I calmly walked towards the bedroom and ignored whatever was hiding in the dining room. I still can't explain it. I should have been mortified, but it was almost like my brain went into autopilot. I eventually woke up at exactly 2:17 a.m., to the sound of heavy footsteps in the hallway. I could have passed it off as one of my parents grabbing a drink, but the footsteps were slow and deliberate, getting louder and louder as they approached my bedroom. My worst fears came true when I heard my bedroom door slowly creak open. I ducked under the covers, hoping that the thing would just leave. But my prayers fell on deaf ears as I felt something sit at the end of my bed. There then came a low, menacing growl. I quickly shot up like a firecracker had just gone off inside my pants. I caught a brief glimpse of a black silhouette with piercing red eyes sitting at the edge of my bed. I then bolted out of the door, screaming for my parents. After calming me down, they asked what the commotion was all about. I told them about the thing that I saw in my bedroom, but of course, there was nothing there now. I was baffled because I knew exactly what I saw. I'm not crazy. I know the difference between nightmares and reality. It's hard to explain the kind of fear you experience when you see something with your own two eyes that you know should not be there. My parents did the obligatory lecturing about having a nightmare and brushing off any possibility of a paranormal event. We continued our stay until Sunday and left for home. To this day, I have no idea what I saw in the cabin that night, and I will not be returning to find out. I like to start off by saying that Christmas is my all-time favorite holiday. However, every year, I remember what happened to my family on Christmas of 2019. I was 12 years old at the time. That year we went to my cousin's house to celebrate Christmas. It was a very fun night, and we enjoyed each other's company. We decided to stay at my cousin's house for the night and leave early the next day. We settled down in the guest bedroom and soon fell asleep. Suddenly, I woke up at 4 a.m., hearing noises coming from downstairs. Against my better judgment, I decided to go check it out. As quietly as I could, I crept down the stairs and looked through the wooden railings into the living room. I saw a figure that appeared to be dressed as Santa, looking under the Christmas tree. I went back upstairs and woke up my dad. "Hey, Dad, Santa came back. He's downstairs." After my dad became fully awake, he seemed alarmed by what I said. we went downstairs to find no one inside the house. My dad told me that I might have just had a bad dream, and we went back to bed. The next morning, when everyone woke up and was getting ready to eat breakfast, my uncle went down to the basement to grab some drinks. When he noticed that one of the basement windows was completely shattered. After the initial shock, my dad and uncle checked the whole house to see if anything was missing or damaged. After they were done searching, they rejoined us in the kitchen. But before they could say anything, a loud crash came from the one place that wasn't checked. The attic. My dad and uncle immediately ran upstairs to check it out. A shouting match followed. We all ran outside and the police were called. When the cops arrived, the officers quickly ran inside the house. A short time later, they brought a man dressed as Santa outside. We later found out that the man had a large knife on him. The officer stated that it wasn't just my cousin's house that was broken into. There were multiple reports of break-ins up and down the block. Before I end this story, there was something that I overheard the cops saying that might be entirely unrelated to this break-in. But apparently they had been dealing with attempted kidnappings of young children at the local mall, with perpetrators dressed as Santa. This story happened in 2016. At the time, I was living on my own in an apartment with my dog, finishing up college. That Christmas, my dad was only 350 miles or so away from me, two states away, as opposed to being over 2,000 miles away in my home state. So my mom flew in, and I drove in with my dog, so we could spend Christmas together. The trip there in the first week was great. It was my first time living away from home, so it was nice to be with my parents again. However, the day before Christmas Eve, my mom found out that my dad was having an affair. And that kind of threw a wrench into things, needless to say. They fought all day into Christmas Eve. I got fed up quick, but I had driven there, so all I had to do was go in my car and drive back home. My parents were upset when they saw me repacking my car. It was now 7 a.m. on Christmas Eve, but I didn't really care. I'd rather spend my Christmas on the road than be in the middle of this drama. There was a lot of snow, but the weather had slowed down for the past few days, so I knew that the roads would be clear, and my car had four-wheel drive. So I set off, and spent the first hour of my road trip just angrily venting everything to my dog. I filled up my car before I left, because I knew that the drive from my dad's apartment to my college town would be exactly one tank of gas. So whenever I needed to refill again, it would be in a familiar area. About 2 hours in, I wanted to give my dog a bathroom break to avoid any accidents in my car. That's when I pulled in to a deserted rest stop to do just that. I hooked him up to his harness and made sure that I had my keys, phone, and my flashlight. I was cleaning up after him when I realized that he was doing these low rumbling noises, the sound that dogs make when they see something. And he began kicking up snow with his hind legs. Now is probably a good time to inform you that I don't have a big scary dog. He's a barely 10-pound Yorkie. The Christmas sweater that my mom made for him didn't exactly help him look more intimidating. He may not be a guard dog, but he is a good motion sensor alarm. I looked up to see what he had been barking at, expecting it to be an animal, but it wasn't. There was a distinctly human figure in the distance. Had my dog not alerted me, I would have never noticed. There were not any other cars in this parking lot, and this place was fairly isolated. It was unnerving. I scooped up my dog and went back to my car. Normally when I picked him up, my dog would stop barking at whatever he sees, but that was not the case this time around. He kept squirming in my arms so he could look behind me, and was getting more and more worked up until he was almost clawing at me. When we got to my car, I finally looked back again, and this time, the figure was much closer, because he was full-on sprinting right at my car. I panicked and threw my dog into the passenger seat. I quickly got in and locked my doors. But of course, my car would not start. I had never had this problem before, but the engine was not wanting to turn over. My dog was now in the back seat scratching at the windows and was going insane, barking and growling. The man reached my car. He resembled any other homeless man I had ever seen, with layers of slightly torn jackets, some dirty jeans, with shaggy hair and a beard. He went from his sprint to a slow jog once he got into the parking lot. When he approached my car, he slammed his hands against the driver window.
"I need a ride."
He sounded out of breath, but very monotone.
Sorry, no. I'm about to call a tow truck, though. If you need a ride, you can get one from him."
I knew that I looked and sounded scared, and the man started pounding on my window again with both fists. He said something about being cold and needing a ride into the city, and that it was Christmas Eve. But at this point, I had stopped paying attention to him and was just focusing on trying to get my dog to calm down. He was still losing his mind in the back seat, still barking, growling, and scratching at the window. My dog has never before or since acted this way towards anybody. While he's not very fond of strangers or new people, he's always been the type to basically ignore strangers or any of their attempts to get his attention. So for him to be going crazy like this was a massive red flag for me. I held onto his harness to get him to relax, and I told the man that if he was cold, he could wait in the restroom for the tow truck to arrive. He motioned for me to roll down my window, and I shook my head no. I finally just put my hands over my dog's mouth, shushing him, and told the man that I couldn't help him. He looked angry, and then tried to open my door. Thankfully, it wouldn't budge, but it made my dog squirm out of my hands and went full-on ballistic again. I pulled out my phone to dial 911, and the second he realized what I was doing, he stepped back from my car and rushed into the bathrooms. Him leaving made my dog instantly lay down and relax. I explained to the dispatch what was going on. The lady was very nice, and she sent a police officer to the rest stop and agreed to stay on the phone with me until he arrived. The man came out of the restrooms and back towards my car. I began to panic again, but when he came close enough, I assumed that he could still hear me on the phone with the dispatch, and that made him run off in the direction he had originally come from. It took 15 minutes for the officer to find me. When we talked, we agreed that it was super expensive to get a tow truck out here on Christmas Eve, so I ended up deciding to call my parents to tell them that my car had broken down. My dad had a big pickup truck and was able to borrow a trailer from his coworker. The officer allowed my dog to sit in his cruiser to warm up while he looked around and followed the man's footprints for a while, but ultimately the man had vanished. My parents arrived around 2 hours later, and the officer helped my dad load the car up onto the trailer. I didn't plan on telling my parents anything more than my car had just broken down, but the officer filled them in about what happened anyway. Both of my parents then felt awful about everything, and they decided not to fight anymore, or at least in front of me. My dad was able to fix my car, but I think the entire situation really scared both him and my mom, because they ended up trading my car in for a new one the day after Christmas. They told me to consider it a late Christmas gift and an early graduation present, and my mom insisted on driving home with me when the holidays were over and flying out of my city instead. I never received any updates from the police if they ever saw or heard from that man again. Hopefully he's learned his lesson about harassing people at rest stops. When selling a house, if a death occurred within 3 years of the house going on the market, the seller is required to inform potential buyers of said death. This little requirement wasn't necessary in my case. Everyone within a 50-mile radius seemed to know about Victoria Teller. It was a tragic story, she had given birth to a bouncing baby boy, whose father no one seemed to know. The baby passed away just a few months later, and Victoria took her life a year after that. That much is known to be true. What was unknown were the circumstances surrounding the incidents. How the baby died. Some said accident, some said illness, some said murder. The popular rumor was that Victoria, in her grief-stricken psychosis, began buying dolls to replace her dearly departed son. The doll would often suffer the same fate as the real baby in her mind. And she would bury it and move on to another. People, mostly teenagers, made it a Halloween tradition to search for the dolls in the nearby graveyard. They searched the backyard and the woods behind it, but nothing was ever found in the 6 years that the house was empty. I was confident that the house that I had bought for my family had nothing strange in its history, aside from the two tragic deaths. The first few months living in the Teller house was uneventful. I had to occasionally shoo away curious locals who weren't aware that our house was no longer empty, but I found no ghosts, satanic symbols, or anything of the like. It seemed that it was just a house, one that I got a huge discount on because of what happened there, and the bad juju it was rumored to have because of it. By the time the Christmas season rolled around, I had pretty much forgotten about Victoria Teller. It was the first year that my son, Caleb, was really aware of anything other than presents. We lined the roof and the windows with lights, hung a wreath on the door, and put some standing decorations on the lawn. We bought and decorated a tree big enough to fit a toy store underneath, which was appropriate because of how many presents Santa was going to bring Caleb that year. He was getting more excited each day, especially since we had been dropping some pretty big hints that he was getting a puppy. My family was the happiest it had ever been, until a week before Christmas. My wife had been wrapping presents as we bought them, so we didn't have to stay up all night on Christmas Eve like we did in previous years. She opened the door to the closet that had the presents to find the wrapping paper torn to shreds. Her first thought was that Caleb had gotten into them, but I doubted that since he wouldn't have been able to contain his excitement if he had. It was almost as if some sort of rodents had shredded the paper, but the boxes weren't damaged at all. We brushed it off as a mystery and moved the presents to the attic after unwrapping them. I would occasionally hear some shuffling inside that closet, but I never saw whatever critter had caused it. I figured that I would call an exterminator after Christmas to check inside the walls. Soon after that, things started to get very strange. I walked into the bedroom to find dirty clothes scattered around the room and the hamper on its side. My wife found the refrigerator door hanging open, with food torn up and thrown to the floor. Caleb was distraught one morning when he woke up to find all the toys that he had carefully placed inside the toy box the night before had been thrown all around his room while he slept. The noises inside the walls became more frequent and could now be heard everywhere in the house. My superstitious wife was becoming scared that the local urban legend was true, that the ghost of Victoria Teller still haunted these grounds. She reasoned that the spirit was becoming more active because we were so happily preparing for the holiday with our son, something that she never got to do. I laughed at her theory, but I shouldn't have. On Christmas Eve, my wife and I put Caleb to bed. We had returned to his room several times to tell him that if he didn't go to sleep, Santa wouldn't bring him anything. When I was convinced that he was finally going to stay in his bedroom, I picked up the puppy from my mother's house, and I brought it home. We hadn't named him yet, but he was a golden retriever puppy that was as energetic as he was soft and fluffy. After playing with him for a while, we put him to bed in his crate, ate the cookies that Caleb left out for Santa, then turned in for the night. I was jerked from my slumber by a blood-curdling scream. My wife and I followed our son's cries for help to the living room, Caleb had snuck out of bed and found the puppy. Instead of the happy fluff ball that we had left by the tree, he found a mangled metal crate filled and surrounded by blood and fur and chunks of discarded meat. My wife took Caleb into another room to console him while I checked the house out for intruders and signs of a break-in. I found nothing, so I returned to the living room and began cleaning up the mess. I was kneeling on the floor, convincing myself that there was a silver lining in the fact that we had hardwood floors instead of carpet, when I heard a tingling noise coming from the tree. I turned my head just in time to see a pair of big blue eyes staring at me from the branches. I jumped to my feet and backed up a few paces, just as the first doll dropped from the tree. It was followed by three others. They were those delicate porcelain dolls, wearing what were probably pretty little dresses at one time. I couldn't tell, because the dresses were covered in dirt and blood. I watched with a mixture of terror and disbelief as all four dolls slowly rose from the ground and started toward me. The screams of my wife and son snapped me out of my horrified trance. The dolls' heads turned as I ran from the room to my family. I raced up the stairs to my bedroom, where I found my wife standing on our bed with Caleb in her arms. Dozens of porcelain dolls, varying in states of damage and filth, were standing on the floor surrounding the bed. They were making their way toward my loved ones, with their tiny arms stretched out, reaching for the woman and child who were desperately trying to stay away from them. I started kicking the dolls out of the way as I hurried to rescue my wife and child. I didn't think a bunch of fucking dolls would be so hard to push through, but I was wrong. For each one that I kicked away, four more came at me. They grabbed, pulled, and thrashed, and I found myself moving away from the bed instead of towards it. After noticing that most of the dolls had directed their attention towards me, I yelled for my wife to run. The dolls that were still trying to reach them were clinging on to the sides of the bed, trying to climb up with their delicate little hands. My wife jumped off the bed, stumbled, and fell. Caleb's head hit the floor, and the resulting cries caught the attention of many of the dolls I was desperately trying to keep away. My wife tried to right herself and gather our son before the wave of small monsters got to them, but she was too late. I watched as the dolls quickly swarmed Caleb and began tearing at his flesh. My wife started trying to get them away from him, but they turned on her when Caleb stopped thrashing. I made my way to them just as my wife stopped fighting. I saw the desperation in her eyes as a doll with black hair and a gray tattered dress bit a chunk from her throat. There were so many of them, we didn't stand a chance. I don't know how long I stood in my bedroom watching the horde of dolls ripping apart the two people that I loved most in this world before I realized I was no longer being attacked. Every porcelain creature crowded around what was left of my wife and son, feasting on them. I've regretted what I did next every day since. I ran. I bounded down the steps as fast as my feet would carry me. I got to the front door when I heard a voice coming from the second floor.
"That's right, my children. Fill those bellies so you can grow big and strong."
I shut the door behind me and fell down the steps of the front porch. After vomiting up the cookies that I had eaten earlier that night, I turned to look at the house. Peeking out of the window, illuminated by the colorful Christmas lights, was a gaunt woman wearing a tattered black dress. She smiled at me through a veil of stringy hair as a doll climbed up the front of her dress and into her arms. She then closed the curtain.